Well, hello and welcome to Mike's R-Lab podcast, episode 145, for the 12th of October, 2017. Well, hello and welcome to this week's podcast. A busy day and busy week this week. Quite a bright morning, little nip in the air, really quite autumnal as the leaves drop. And the beets were harvested this week. Tuesday we had a Reading Geek Night. It was very quiet and it seems to places have been either very busy or very quiet. I think there's a lot of conferences have been going on, certainly looking on Twitter. I'm seeing a lot of events going on, including one at the ODI in Leeds, which is Open Data Institute up there. We got to know some of those people at Wuthering Bytes. Talking about Wuthering Bytes, the Tech for Good podcast was published, and it was a live recording. I think I mentioned it at the time. They were asking people to raise some points, and I raised my point, and it generated a lot of interest amongst the panel, and that's all been included in the podcast, which is great. So if you look for techforgood.live, L-I-V-E, which is one of the newer top-level domains, then you'll find episode 17 recorded at Wuthering Bytes. Next week is the Duncan's of IoT, Thames Valley IoT fame, his special security event going on the 17th, that's Tuesday. On this coming Sunday, we've got the Repair Cafe at R-Lab, and pound coins become, the old pound, round pound coins become not legal tender on that date also. And next Tuesday is also the release of the Fall Creators Update for Windows 10. Wednesday is the PHP Barks event at Thames Tower. You can find that on their meetup group. Thursday, we've got OshHug, which is in BCS in London. Oh, and the PHP Barks one, their focus next week is on MongoDB and other NoSQL databases. Something of interest to us at the Things Network, because it's one of the technologies that is being used for storing our data. So a busy week coming up and a busy week in the past. So let's dive into the Google groups and see what was going on. So as I closed up the podcast last week, Jeremy posted about one of the things that was included in the stuff from RS was their Plantronics wireless headsets. And he did some tests with a USB device and was able to get them working. He said the impedances are probably all wrong, because I don't recommend directly connecting to anything you care about. But you get a USB audio adapter for around £5. Maybe that's something I should look at to see if I can use that to improve the sounds. I did tweak a couple of the settings when I did the podcast last week. Any feedback on whether you think it's improved because of that, or vice versa, then please let me know. But no one else seemed to have run with Jeremy's project, made any comments about it. So I don't know whether anyone's using the headsets or not, but I guess if you're using them for audio conferencing, then they are a handy thing. You could wander around and pace while others are putting their points in such audio conferences, as I recall when we used to run some. Oh, yeah, and I mentioned that I did include the opening part in last week's podcast, but I thought it's not really worth re-encoding the whole and loading it back up again, because that sometimes causes problems with iTunes and their caching. So I left it as it is. No one seems to have had a problem with that. And I mentioned Jay Maxwell, who was talking about being involved with Autodesk certification program and helping to drive the uptake of Fusion 360, and how pertinent it was that it came along just at a time when Malcolm is doing workshops in East Berkshire, focusing on Fusion 360 at Reading Geek. Andy, who normally does the videoing, presented about his activities in scripting terms within Fusion 360, which was interesting. And my discussions with the project manager for the Reading Museum and Merle in terms of their plans for doing 3D scanning and printing of artifacts and their interest in Fusion 360 as a potential tool. I mentioned the MGB GT video that Yale had put up, and I was going to include it in my post, in my playlist on YouTube channel, and I have indeed done that. And I also added an open data channel, because there was a conference going up, as I mentioned, at ODI in Leeds, and that was talking about travel hacking. It was a travel hackathon conference, and they were developing some tools, and they published two live streams of their event, which I've linked in. So if you look on my channel, Mike the B UK, that you'll find an open data channel and links to their videos there. So there was some very good content, and I summarized some of the bits I've got out of it that I haven't watched all of the second video yet, under the Thames Valley TTNUG, TV TTNUG group on Google Groups. And I put my thanks up for Tara's workshop. As I mentioned last week, managed to get the leather lily done. And there's a launch event for that on Monday. So I think hopefully we might see the florist's efforts with all the various lilies. Some of them were really quite spectacular, and a whole range of them be put together as a bouquet, as my understanding. And on the same topic, I was asking Celia if she knew when the Haslam's display was going to be in place. I haven't seen a reply on that one yet, so maybe there's no schedule for it. Oh, and the Basing Hack event on the 18th, that's next Wednesday also. But they were looking to see if there was anyone would help them making some shoes, as they'd put in their publicity about shoemaking. And no one's picked up on being able to offer them that, although Tars would seem to be an obvious candidate. Might not be able to get down to a Basingstoke that evening. So if anyone knows anyone with equipment or advice that they could start to accumulate and contacts in Basingstoke area, then please let Eric Oldraft know under the thread title Making Shoes and Boots. And on the running story of Boxford updates, as it, you might say, long time no post, says Toby. Last time we successfully tested the smoothie board running the Boxford in every aspect. However, due to a discrepancy in how pauses are implemented, we couldn't do any tool changes. Since then, we have had success in persuading the CNCJS developer to include some functionality to do tool changes. And this week we did a test using the preview version, which worked great. Once it's launched, we shall be in a good place to do another integrated test with tool changes supported. So thanks to Toby for that update. And it's great to see, really, the feedback loop to developers and the consumers, as it were. And a bit of an update on techniques with the MIG welder. We have a roll of aluminium welding wire. Well, we have had a roll for ages, says Ian. Yesterday I got a Teflon liner for the second torch. Arthur produced some very presentable welding on some scrap. I also got 0.6 mild steel wire. We were using 0.8, he says, which will make welding on lighter material easier. Mark asks about doing thin stainless steel, as he has a teapot he wants to fix. Thin stainless steel is a really good job, says Arthur. Something I haven't got to grips with yet, and don't expect presentable results in one afternoon, unless you have secret welding ninja skills. And they also post, Arthur posts pictures of more progress downstairs. As soon as the new wall appeared, I have MDF'd it. Sheet of steel you can use to, or the sheet of steel that you used to have to lug around onto a table to weld on is now permanently on a bench with a vise and removable wood top, so it can be used as a normal bench the rest of the time. So if you see a bench with a white top, and then underneath it is the metal base, and there's a slot for the vise, which is welded to that metal base, or is bolted down to it. He also points out that the PPE, personal protection, is now living below the first aid kits, directly on the right as you come into the workshop. And he posts some pictures of said items. Oh, the wall he was talking about was where the steel racking was, that was supporting a lot of stuff way up into the bay. There is now, I guess the idea is that the MDF will be used for mounting things upon. So they went to the tool show at Kempton Park last week, and there was some discussion about the value of it. They seem to think they've got some really good contacts and got talking to different people, introductions to machine tool people and techniques, which will be very helpful for purchasing maintenance and contacts for the future with our lab. Did I miss it? Was there a Sputnik in the chill out area, what used to be the chill out area, now the kitchen area? Don't think I saw it. I've created a 3D model of Sputnik 1 to mark the 60th anniversary, says Tony, on the 7th. I've also uploaded the files to Thingiverse, and he posts a link to that. So I need to put that over on the TV RepRap user group thread. Oh yes, here's the update on the tool show. Arthur, Ian, Luke and I had a good trip to the tool show today. From personal interest, it was a good opportunity to look at different solutions to our challenges like dust extraction and tool sharpening. We also had a really good chat with one of the big tool manufacturers about requirements and how they could engage with the Hackspace community. So that's a great expedition. And it was good to see a carload of people were able to get down there. And news on the what was the dead laser cutter. I think the new power supply must have been received. And well, it was received and installed. I think I mentioned that last week. And then there was a lot of cleaning up. There's some new lights put in, some changes to the bed to make it more secure, as those blades tended to drop out quite easily. And Tony reminding people that cleaning the laser is mandatory, is now mandatory. Well, it was always mandatory, really. I still find it dirty on a regular basis, he says, because it's a question of sanctions. But remember that you are being recorded. You can probably hear a dustman arriving outside, or should I say waste operatives. And Will's post about saying he was keen to get inducted on the table saw and the bandsaws and any other woodworking kit prompts Arthur to start a list, which then grows. So the list is the current list of inductible machines and processes. Hopefully this is on the wiki. If not, then it should be 3D printer, bandsaw 1, bandsaw induction 2, CNC, Oxford, brazing hearth, casting crucible, Hackspace, that could be at the top of the list really, a large sewing machine, laser cutter, metal chop saw, metal lathe, MIG welder, TIG welder, mitre saw, pedestal grinder, planer thicknesser, Shapoko, table saw, wood lathe, and then Arthur says, can you add on a router table and handheld routers to the list? So that shows the comprehensive set of tools that are being built up in the space. And these are just the dangerous ones, as it were. And talk about inductions. 3D printer induction was run by Alex on Monday. Several people got to learn more and will be printing bits and pieces off, including Chris, with the looking to do some enclosures, which is a great project for the 3D printer. And the next session of Board Stupid went ahead on Tuesday, and David first of all posts up some pictures of the progress he made prior to the evening and some questions. And post the evening, David says, thanks for efforts and help, I managed to get to the end of the workflow and order 10 boards from PCBWay last night. So that's success. Although I guess success is when you've received them and they're A, all correct, and B, had components populated. But we have to celebrate the successes of each stage in such processes. And also on the 17th, Pav is offering to do CPR training. I guess that's resuscitation, covering basic life support and bleeding control with a practice session. It says I can do up to 8 people. There's been a couple of people asking. So it seems as though there will be some more spaces. I may arrange another session in the future, if there is the demand. So that's something I need to add to the calendar. And more information about the bandsaw, Arthur posts. Rob had some 12mm steel plates to cut last night as part of his project for improving the security of his compound. It's going to be an impenetrable fortress once he's done, they say. So I suggested we tested the bandsaw's metal cutting ability. We lowered the speed right down, and it's worth noting that upping the blade tension is vital for a clean cut when switching to metal. It won't win any speed awards, but it cuts very neatly and creates very little mess. And they post some pictures of the edge of the cut, some very large pictures, but they're very detailed. And it's interesting, some of the striations, a word I picked up on this week, popped out of a something I was reading. Striations are seen on there, which is interesting in the way that it obviously cuts. To me, it looks as though maybe the blade cuts slightly differently on different parts as it goes around. Anyway, they say, we haven't tested what kind of radius you can get yet. That will be a test soon. As a reminder, if you want to do this, you will need level 2 induction on the bandsaw and only use the metal blades which are sprayed red. And he also posts a link to a video of it. And I think one thing that was noted from the video is that there's an extra guide that's going to be put, or an extra protective section to be put on the higher area of the blade, given that it's a big area at the top, which should be protected. And so that was one of the additional plans that I heard was going to be put in place. And Toby says, yes, I fancy making some knives for Christmas presents, and it seems like this might be making the job much easier. So maybe that's something we can add to the special interest area, metal working, including projects for knives and things. Remember, who was it? Oh, I think it was Derek who was doing knife handles. And we had at the Repair Cafe someone who brought some along and was looking. Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, the Repair Cafe a few months back, someone brought some handles. They put knives into the dishwasher and it had rotted the rivets, and they were asking how the rivets could be replaced, and made some suggestions, because we have a knife sharpening expert who comes along to the Repair Cafe to train people on doing knife sharpening. And talk about the Repair Cafe, Stuart says, just a reminder that we have a Repair Cafe this Sunday at our lab, set up from 11:30, opens at 12, close at, till 4:30. Closing at 5, basically. Yeah, close. Don't take any more repairs from around about 4:30 or just before, depending on their complexity or perceived complexity. But he says, please promote the event. Post a link to the Facebook or to the transitionreading.org.uk site. If you can't repair, come along, eat cake, drink tea, bring stuff to repair. Just be sociable. All helps bring the atmosphere up. And makes a real community spirit when everyone's bouncing around like that. And our lab is a good venue for it. Always impresses people and draws new members in. And Alexander posted up a question about anyone got any spare XLR collectors. And it sort of brought a couple of questions about whether they should be the male or female, or whether they should be a sort of a panel mounting socket, which is actually what he asks for. But then he talks about some cable based ones, which obviously aren't panel mounting. Scott says I'll have a few if they're going, so if anyone did have spare ones. In fact, he ended up ordering the ones he wanted, but it sounds if people have got some spare ones, it'd be worth posting up in that thread. There was also apparently some in the stage lights, and they might have come out of those spotlights that we mentioned Tom was stripping down. But the interesting point from that was that there's a DMX standard that uses XLR, but it uses 5 pins rather than DJ stuff, which uses 3. Well, he says cheap, but I don't think it's a question of it being cheap. I think it's just that the microphone standard only needed 3. So I asked him about it. Anyway, he said he'd ordered some, and he was looking for 2 pairs of stereo, and I guess they were the panel mounted ones, but he says if anyone's got any cable ones, adapters, they could be used. So as I said, post it up there in the thread from unwanted XLR connectors from the 8th of October. And an unresolved question posted on the 10th from Jim saying, I've forgotten the administrator password. I bought a copy of PC Unlocker, followed the instructions to load it, and then tried to boot the machine only to be asked for a system password, which I've not got. I've tried getting into the BIOS using F2 and F10 without success. Last resort seems to be to remove the CMOS battery. And a couple of suggestions come in from Stuart. He says the System Rescue CD has some excellent tools for resetting Windows passwords. But then there's also some questions from Eric about what type and does it have a UEFI BIOS, and some points from Oliver and Vance about actually getting into it by pressing the escape or maybe the delete key, all different ones. And I guess you have to look up for your particular hardware as to what technique you do to get into the BIOS side of things. But it's a little bit unclear as to which password it's actually requesting from him. And Alex is looking to borrow an install disk for Mac OS Leopard for a PowerPC that he is trying to bring back to life. He says that what he's trying to achieve is to run a web browser capable of displaying Octoprint plus some Python-based slicer, Prontoface, and Arduino IDE tools. And Oliver, being a more modern person, says about you doing the internet recovery option command R, and was asking if it worked. And Tom points out that it was introduced much later. The PowerPC machine is at least 12 years old, he says. Personally, I'd bid it. And I'm not sure exactly what happened at the end here. Let's have a look. There is apparently a Debian for PowerPC as an option on the Linux side. Yes, and Stuart comes back with Debian and Ubuntu and running Linux from MacObserver.com and some other suggestions. So that was only yesterday, so we'll see. But also, apparently, the screen can be repurposed. It does have a DVI port if you make up the right cables, a suggestion from Ben. So interested to see how Alex solves his problem and whether it involves a PowerPC Mac. And then, so last thread for this week is again from Alex, talking about a totally different project, Shed Base Laying, looking to lay a 20-foot by 10-foot shed, removing Lelandii conifers, disposing of them, and laying whatever sort of base. I'm thinking concrete pad, he says, but if there's an alternative method, then he's looking to consider it, given his height limitations. So he'll be suggesting something called Mats Grids, MATSGRIDS.co.uk, ground reinforcement on a levelled surface, he says, clipped together and filled with aggregate of your choice, produces a very solid, stable surface, or did for me. And Stuart suggests mybuilder.com to find builders who do various jobs, comes recommended. So posting his last reply of thanks at midnight concludes that thread and concludes the podcast for this week. So this is Mike the Bee, signing off.